maybe we could get started. I think everyone probably already knows who you are, but maybe just give a little, you know, bio.
The author of the Bitcoin white paper goes by Satoshi Nakamoto,
creator of Bitcoin.
Nothing to do with Bitcoin.
Thousands of people would like to know who really created Bitcoin.
But they used anonymous, untraceable credentials. So that's why it's so hard to pinpoint who it may be. And then we know they since faded into the background.
Okay, hello and welcome to the Sunset Circuit podcast. Today we have very special guest, artist Rare Skrilla, my husband, joining us to talk about Bitcoin art.
Oh yeah, what's up?
Thanks for taking the time to do this. How has Bitcoin improved your life?
Bitcoin's definitely improved my life in terms of like understanding money and the concept of money and, you know, kind of everything really. I was pretty financially illiterate until I learned about Bitcoin, probably in terms of like how the dollar, you know, was decreasing in value so much, and, you know, Bitcoin kind of change my thoughts on that, I guess.
And what has kept you interested in it all these years?
Well, it's proven to be a game-changing, you know, money experiment. You know, kind of went from experiment to, you know, mainstream over the last 15 years. You know, documenting through art and music, like everything, you know, all the culture inside of Bitcoin. There's a lot of kind of like culture that, you know, cypherpunk culture, or you know, just really has led me to like focus my art on kind of like an overarching like fake theme. Like Bitcoin is kind of like fake money, but it's the realest money we have, but it's like it's not a tangible money like we know of cash. But, you know, money in general, for, you know, even people that aren't in Bitcoin, the money is fake because it's just like numbers that show up in a computer, you know, database for the most part nowadays.
It's the hardest money we ever had, yeah. But also fake. And then you kind of ran with that fake theme too with the fake rares. Maybe you can give an explanation of that.
Yeah, so I got in, you know, got into Bitcoin and kind of tried to figure out how to do art and music within Bitcoin pretty immediately. And I did Rare Pepe's, like the kind of like first like artist themed project on the blockchain back in 2016. And Fake Rares is kind of like a pick up where that left off, because that closed down in 2018. So in 2021, I was able with a couple of friends helping me out to spin up a new directory of meme art and using Bitcoin. And so Fake Rares really digs into like the whole like everything is fake vibe of kind of the world in general.
And what is art on the blockchain?
It's fake, generally.
Come on.
I mean, there's a whole lot of different ways to spin art on the blockchain. Art on the blockchain could be art that's not even on the blockchain. It could be art that is on chain permanently, like living inside of the network or software, Bitcoin or Ethereum, etc. Or it could be tokens you make that kind of point to digital art or physical art. It can be, you know, private keys on your, you know, art prints. It can, you know, that you can store money and have them as wallets, or it can be smart contract art where you're using different smart contracts and things in the blockchain to create art. It can just be like a, you know, really like a lot of meme art gets traded on the blockchain. So I would say like memes definitely have moved like to monetize memes on the blockchain for sure. You know, digital art that people couldn't sell previously, the blockchain has helped digital artists use the blockchain. That's, you know, it's become blockchain art. You know, art about Bitcoin, whether it's like in your face where you got like a Bitcoin symbol, or more like art that is about like money in general. A lot of that is art on the blockchain, Bitcoin art, crypto art.
And how does someone become a crypto artist?
Well, anybody, the whole point of crypto art was to, in crypto music, which is another thing I'm interested in, is to get out of the traditional systems. So like traditional art world is very, you know, high society, get in with the, you know, collectors and, you know, Art Basels and Christie's and Sotheby's, etc., and, you know, the music labels, get a record contract, and, you know, which is a, you know, glorified loan basically. But art and music using the blockchain kind of is supposed to bypass all that, so anybody can get into it. And that's the whole point of it, is that anybody can get into it and instantly trade or sell their art peer-to-peer using the blockchain.
And what's the market been like over the years?
Oh, up and down, just like crypto, just like art, just like music, just like collectibles, anything, you know. It's been ebbs and flows for sure. You know, it was small. It was only a few hundred of us, you know, at first. Really, like, there was less than 100, I think, when it first started. But, you know, there's probably millions of people now involved in it at some level, like in and out of it. So I've seen it grow exponentially, way faster than I thought it was going to grow.
Like, what was the average price of a rare Pepe during those rare Pepe trading days?
You know, oftentimes free, just trading back and forth, like artist to artist, or, you know, really, you know, selling them for $5, $10, $20, sometimes $50. That was like a lot of money back then for like a rare Pepe. You know, that caught on with the masses. Ethereum kind of exploded with the art scene. All the rare Pepes and a lot of stuff I do is on Bitcoin, but, you know, I've done stuff on Ethereum and other chains as well. And Ethereum kind of brought in a bunch of collectors and outside artists, like, you know, that were like big on Instagram and, you know, in like the pop world and stuff like that, traditional art world. And they helped bring a lot of eyes on it. And with that came a lot of money. And, you know, I'm sure everybody knows or has heard of NFTs and how in 2021 they just went crazy and they became real speculative. But that wasn't like the art scene that I was really brought up in. I saw a lot of that happening, but on the Bitcoin side, the XCP side, which is like the chain we use to mint a lot of the stuff, it was pretty just more around just like messing around on the blockchain and kind of experimenting and having fun. But those early pieces became valuable because of all that. But it's a whole lot. There's you know, so many niches even within like crypto art and blockchain art and digital art that, you know, everybody has a different story, I think.
What's the benefit of putting the art right on the blockchain?
Well, so digital art in general, you know, is hard to sell. So if you're a digital artist, which is a real thing, you know, before the blockchain, you know, it was harder to sell. And digital art's been around for, you know, many decades, but it wasn't until the blockchain kind of became a thing that people were able to then trade them instantly and mint them and show provenance and chain of custody and, you know, transaction history of who's bidding. And there's a whole lot of like things that it brought to the table for digital arts and memes too. Like memes are like the, you know, kind of hieroglyphics of the digital age. And, you know, people are creating memes, you know, we're trying to sell them on, say, like for the rare Pepes, you know, they were selling, making rare Pepes and trying to sell them on eBay, and eBay's taking down listings because they thought it was a joke. And so with, you know, the rare Pepes, what they solved was, you know, taking meme art and giving it provenance and able to instantly trade and sell the art, which before you couldn't really do. You know, it was kind of a system that was broken.
Very good. And where's the market these days in 2025? Like, is it on fake rares, ordinals, inscribing, or, you know, stamps, dank rares? Like, where do you prefer to put your art?
It depends. You know, I've minted some pieces this year, like music pieces on Ethereum, because it makes more sense there. Generally because of collaborations. It's easier to do and kind of show provenance with collaborations on Ethereum. And Manifold is like a smart contract platform you can use that you're able to, it's really easy to use. So it's easy to use on Ethereum, and it shows up on OpenSea and your collections and stuff like that. For like the meme art and stuff like that, I generally do that on Bitcoin, which is, and I've done some on Ethereum, but generally Bitcoin, which is like XCP and ordinals or stamps. I've done all those places. And then if I'm like experimenting with like different styles and, you know, kind of want to make cheaper selling art to kind of get out there, I do that on Tezos, which is, you know, a blockchain that I'm not at all interested in, but there's a really good art community, so it's really good for like kind of experimental mints and stuff over there. And you know, it's funny because like if you mint on Bitcoin or Ethereum, generally prices are way higher, and if you mint on like Tezos or like Solana or some of these other ones, they're way cheaper because there's just not like the collector belief that those chains will be around as long as like Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Cool. And like, what are the market, like, is it a, where is the market compared to when it was at its peak in 2021? Like, what would, how much down is it from there?
I mean, it's weird. It's like, this is the thing, like, the amount of money being thrown around in 2021, like, in blockchain, I don't know if we'll see that again. Like, but with that said, certain pieces still command a lot of money, like, from certain artists or certain works. It's just not as like everybody going out and just throwing money at anything, hoping that it sticks. And that's what we saw in 2021. So the market's a lot more tame now. It's a lot more like grounded. It's not as like moon boy centric. You know, back in 2021, you had like people buying celebrities that pumped their bags and, you know, having like DJ parties in Ibiza. And
it was, you know, awesome.
It was a little different. And nowadays it's way more tempered, but with that said, there's a lot of like ground being broke. It's also better to kind of work in this environment because the people collecting now are like the true believers. It's not just like as many speculators coming in as like tourists and visitors kind of trying to speculate and get quick flips and stuff like that. It's more of a grounded community now.
Nice. And where do you think it's headed? Like, what's your, you know, 3, 5, 10-year outlook?
I mean, it's hard to say. I've got my bets placed. Like, I do believe, like, we're in this, like, mimetic kind of period of art where, like, digital art or, like, internet art and mimetic art and stuff like that is going to be, like, a whole thing that, you know, you look back in art history as, like, a time period of stuff happening. And I also believe, like, art using the blockchain, like smart contract art and on-chain dynamic art, stuff like that, that kind of changes. It's like living artwork. I think that those, you know, I play some bets in that realm. And, you know, art about Bitcoin in like an artistic way or a fun way, I generally think that will do well, like certain pieces. But with that said, like, you know, just like with digital art and NFTs and stuff and blockchain art, it's the same as like physical drawings and paintings and stuff. Like, there's like millions and millions of that being made on the digital side and the physical side, people drawing pictures and paintings and, you know, people making NFTs, and only a small percentage of that stuff will be important and the future years. So it's no different, like whether it's digital or physical. I think we're just going into a more digital like world. Everybody's kind of like on their phones or computers and AI and, you know, all this stuff. I think that, you know, it's a lot more nomad living and stuff like that. Like, funny enough, like I've had collectors that, you know, I've made digital art and it comes with like a physical counterpart, and they don't want the physical piece because they don't have a home. They just travel, you know, from Airbnb to country. And there's a lot of people like that, that collect art. And so it's easier for them to, you know, collect or speculate on digital art because they don't have to, like, be burdened with holding and traveling with the pieces. And also, digital art is interesting because, you know, the post office, and you know, they'll wreck your stuff. Like, I got a piece I bought recently, just today actually, it got delivered.
It did? It finally got delivered?
No, a different piece. Oh. And it was broken. The frame was broken, so they had to send it back. And like, that doesn't happen with like digital art. There's no like, you know, there's different, like, everything's a PSA 10. It's mint condition, you know. The kind of like, you know, there's interesting things with that, because I mean, I've generally sent out and bought a lot of art in the last like 5-10 years, and you know, especially during COVID, it was like 50-50 if you sent a piece out, if it was going to make it, or
especially if you're sending it to Canada.
Yeah, I mean,
or England.
I ordered something from Japan during COVID, and it showed up like 13 months later, just randomly, you know. Or like that time I sent out two pieces to a gallery show I had in Switzerland, and they were sent out at the exact same time, the same like delivery, and one of them made it and the other one ended up in, like, I had to deal with the post office police, and they didn't know what happened, and then randomly, like 8 months later, just showed back up to my house. Like,
and it's so sad when it's like a piece of art that you've spent, you know, either when you're buying or selling it, either you personally spent all the time working on it or someone else did and you spent a lot of money buying it. It's like the worst thing if something messes up with the mail.
I mean, look at that glass piece I just spent 2 months making, and then I dropped it and it broke, and I'm trying to fix it now.
That was like, so sad.
I mean, that's physical art. I love physical art. I actually love physical art more than digital art for the most part, but
yeah, and there must be other ways to sell it, like in person, or you know, there's ways around this.
There's pros and cons of both.
Yeah. What about, like, when you said generative stuff, that kind of reminded me of Beat Blocks. Maybe you could give a little explanation of what that is.
Yeah, so we started putting music on chain in the Bitcoin network, and it's basically like, you know, creates like a sound library within the blockchain, and you can recursively call those sounds, and with that said, you can make like generative music, dynamic music that you couldn't do before, that was like permanently on chain. And the permanence is like important to me, because I've had a ton of digital music over the last, you know, since the beginning of the millennium, disappear on the internet. Whether it's like the service goes down, or you got to pay to keep it up, you know, stuff disappears. And, you know, putting it on Bitcoin, if you can do that, you know, I think Bitcoin is like the longest lasting thing we have at this moment. So it makes sense to me to put it on there. So we've been experimenting with putting like music on Bitcoin and making generative music, which I think is a really cool thing. Like, generative music is like a whole new way to tackle songs and albums. And, you know, I'm not going to get all the way into it right now, but if you're listening to this and you want to learn more, you know, check out beatblocks.io.
Nice. Yeah, I think there's something special about, you know, putting the art on the Bitcoin blockchain. Like, if, you know, something happens to our civilization and that's the ledger that people can look at, it's like, I don't know, it's like what you said, it's never going anywhere. It's always going to be accessible. When free speech was, you know, it looked like free speech in America was over in 2022 before Elon bought Twitter. It was like, you couldn't say anything. And then, you know, inscriptions came along and it was like, no, we can say whatever we want. No one can stop us. So I think that's, you know, a pretty big revolution.
Yeah, the great thing about it is like as censorship resistant as we can get by doing that. It's dangerous in a way, because it does, like, you know, possibly put Bitcoin in jeopardy. If somebody was to put, like, you know, some kind of crazy government file into the Bitcoin network, they would try to, like, I'm sure, try to stop it. But that's interesting also, because then it's like, can you stop Bitcoin? And if you can, then maybe it's not the thing that we think it should be in 100 years. And, you know, so like, it's better to find these like pain points out now than later, in my opinion. So I would be interested to see something like that happen, possibly, like something like if they uploaded WikiLeaks type information in the blockchain that you couldn't get rid of, like how would that be viewed, or how would like the, you know, men in black or whatever you want to call them, like how would they handle that type of situation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're calling to roll back the chain, but you can't roll back Bitcoin.
Yeah, it would ruffle a lot of feathers, but I mean, that's kind of the point of Bitcoin, is like to not to appease to like what the traditional financial system. And Bitcoin is like is funny because you it's just you have to pay a transaction fee to get your data in the block. So, you know, whether it's a monetary transaction or you're putting artwork or music into it or creating a shit coin, you know, it's just like, it's a free market within Bitcoin to see, you know, how much it costs to get into the next block.
And how much does it cost? Like, how much would it cost to put, I don't know if you want to share this information, but like your Sound Money album, how much did that cost to put on or then, and what would the same file cost now?
Well, when I did it then, it was a lot more expensive. I think it was roughly $400 or $500 a song to get on there. Maybe a little less, but it was expensive. They were large files. And at the time, they were some of the biggest files. But now it would be way cheaper because of beat blocks. The technology that we have, we got the Ordinals devs to change the code in Ordinals to allow beat blocks to come on, because we use Opus files, which is 40% smaller files, so it automatically saves you 40% in cost there. But also the fact that you can like just recursively do stuff now, you can like just, you know, we could just, if it was just like a, you know, say the beat had like an eight bar drum loop with a couple breaks, you just record like that one 8-bar drum loop and a couple of the breaks and then stitch it together with code later, so you wouldn't have to put the whole 3-minute file, and you can build the songs up that way. So that would be a lot.
You can make the exact same song again, like you can recreate it.
Yeah, if you have all the different stems that make up the song inscribed, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait to start hearing more music on like that.
Yeah, beat blocks.
I guess it doesn't change the listening experience that much, but the ownership.
Yeah, it's cool because it's kind of a way to like, you know, with music, especially like in my opinion, like, you know, a big thing with music is people discovering artists early. Like that's what everybody is like, all real music heads are like always trying to find the next thing. So with this, with blockchain, which hasn't really been explored very much yet, but I think it will be in the future, is like one of the benefits of putting music on the blockchain is like you can be an early fan and have proof of it now because you collected that piece early. So like if like your favorite band, you know, started putting out music and they used the blockchain, you know, you could just prove like you were the first person to listen and collect their work. You could prove it, you were in the first year, you know, 10 years later when they're big. So it could almost like even like for like, there's a lot of like content creators that make playlists and like monetize off that. So like, it's like, it would be that on steroids, because you could like provably show like, I'm early to this, and this, look at my wallet, check the dates. So there's a lot of like unexplored stuff still with that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of love showing my counterparty wallet off because I got, you know, you sent me those DJ Pepes pretty early.
Yeah.
I feel proud of my wallet, but I'm light on the music collection. But what's the user experience like for, you know, compared to listening on iTunes Ordinals?
Yeah, not nearly as good. So that's part of what needs to be built out still, is like an interface that makes sense for like the user. Right now it's pretty like early and all that stuff. Like that's kind of the trade-off with like collecting and doing stuff on like Ordinals. So if we're talking about that, like it's early still, so it's not easy to access. So, you know, if you think that it's gonna grow the whole ecosystem, then, you know, getting the early stuff generally is like, you know, a lot of times very valuable.
Well, yeah, prove that way for the art.
Yeah. And like, you know, that over time, I think the meta will shift a little bit. Like, it's really, I don't know what's going to happen, but like, when you think about like any collectible or art, like just because like something is old doesn't always necessarily mean it's valuable. But with like, it's like certain record albums, I can go to a thrift store and find like a 1950s album, pretty much any thrift store right now, and get it for a dollar. So it doesn't generally mean like, oh, it's old, so it's worth more. But if I could get some of the very first LPs created and they're in like mint condition or near mint condition, those are worth money. And so it's kind of like the same thought. So it's like, not, doesn't have to, being old doesn't necessarily mean, but being like one of the first things, like kind of like pioneer, the people that pioneered different things. Like even like baseball cards, if you buy like a 1940s like Bowman card, if it's in mint condition, it's generally going to already have value. It doesn't matter who the baseball player is. If you get a baseball card from back in that era, that's like Mickey, you know, Joe DiMaggio or somebody, then it's gonna be worth a lot more. If you go all the way back to like the Honus Wagner card, of course, which is the most like valuable baseball card because they're, you know, hard to keep a baseball card in mint condition for over 100 years, and they were already kind of rare at the time they came out. So, you know, it's interesting. I mean, look at old pottery they dig up, you know, from 3,000 years ago or something. Like, you don't know who made it or anything. It's just old, so it's valuable, right? It's like an early relic. So if blockchain was to stick around and this, all this stuff worked for the next like 100, 200 years, then I assume the early stuff that was collected, a lot of it is going to get lost because people are going to lose their wallets. Like, people are going to die and not pass down their provenance or their keys to their families over many generations. You're going to have a lot of things like disappear or be untradeable. So the things that, you know, in a couple hundred years, let's say, like the things that you still are able to collect from like, you know, 2014, 16, 2018, like those, I think, will still have quite a bit of value because they're just the earliest collectibles and you won't be able to collect them because by that time, there'll be so many different iterations that have come forth of the blockchain anyway. Like, you probably won't even be able to access those unless you're like, we're keeping them up to date and like moving them and wrapping them to the next thing and keeping up with the blockchain stuff, but they'll get stuck at some point where as the blockchain grows. So
someone will have to keep a counterparty node going for all the time.
Well, you don't have to keep it going. So like if all of counterparty nodes stopped working today and people shut them off, all that stuff still exists. You just have to spin
them
up.
But how do you trade it?
You just have to spin it back up, a counterparty node. Okay. And then it would, you know, just like the blockchain node, it would...
Just spin it up?
Yeah. That's not really my expertise, so I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole.
All right. What would be a sentence you would say to the kids of Bitcoin? Think of Thomas's age group.
Get some. Like, I think it's important to get some. Like, work for some, you know, it's kind of hard to be like, yo, go out there and spend a bunch of money on this asset that's worth like $80,000, but you don't need a whole Bitcoin. Just get some so that you have some, like, number one, like, get it, if you can, get it anonymously. There's ways to do that, like, because, you know, that's the best way to...
Well, like what you said, working for it is a good way to get it now, honestly.
Yeah, and like, that, you know, there's different levels of kind of like Bitcoin. And then definitely keep it safe. Don't ever put anything on your computer, like your passphrase, your seed phrase, your private key. Don't ever take a picture of it, anything like that. And then keep your, you know... If you have like a little stash, like, it doesn't matter, but you know, if you grow your stash, you definitely want to like take like security measures, so like multi-sig and get it out of your home and move it to like different geographical points and, you know, bank vaults and et cetera, et cetera.
Nice. And what's your favorite thing about the Sunset Circuit event?
I think it's cool, like, that's another way to like earn Bitcoin, like by working, by winning a race. Like, if you're a fast runner and you're in the area, like, why wouldn't you come down and try to do a, you know, 2 minute race and win the Bitcoin. So it's also good to have like a, get to know a group of people, kind of like like-minded people, and as it grows, I think. And, you know, health and fitness is part of Bitcoin. Like, you're having a health and fitness of like financially and like learning about the ropes of that. So, you know, your body can be seen as that as well. So, you know, keep it in shape a little bit and have some fun.
Nice. I appreciate you've gone along with me, helped me set it all up every week, the tents and whatnot. And don't get mad at me for maybe wasting our time and money.
No, that's good. It's a good family event. It's the only family event that all of our family has to be at every month.
Yeah. Good fresh air. And where can people find you if they want to follow your art journey?
You can go to rareskrilla.com, and I should have a new website up there as soon as it's going to be deployed, but there's an old website up there now. Or follow me on Twitter at Skrilla Ventura.
Nice. You won't be disappointed. All right, thanks.
The American financial system is rocked to its foundation as top Wall Street institutions topple under a mountain of debt.
Bailed out by the taxpayers.
It's pretty clear they cannot be trusted.
He said, your problem is that you're trying to understand this as an economic story. Once you look at it as a crime story,
you'll get it.
Yeah.
The Fed is losing control once again. In just a couple of days, the U.S. Federal Reserve has pumped out $125 billion and handed that money over to commercial banks once again.
Just keeping a tool of the globalist financial elite.
But my faith and my money help me rise above.
You are asking for the biggest bailout in the history of this country.
Rise above.
It led to an age of populism, a deep distrust of Wall Street, and a near meltdown of the global economy.
See.
The world is walked by the biggest bankruptcy in U.S. history. It's exactly what you think is as bad as it could possibly get. Another disaster is just waiting around the corner.
Chancellor on brink of second bailout for
banks.
Money markets will dry up around the world by the end of the week. ATMs will stop spitting bills. Federal deposit insurance will collapse. Banks will close. Mobs panic. It's gonna be the end of the world, Bill.